and a very special edition of Mooney Goes Wild today, reporting to you from Bord Bia Bloom here in the Phoenix Park to fill our senses with the color, sound, sense, and the vibrant energy of this family festival of flowers, picnics, crafts, trees, gardens, and other spaces dedicated to conservation, biodiversity, and a more environmentally friendly, conscious world. Now in its 17th year, the show has proved itself as an invaluable platform in highlighting pressing issues such as climate change, sustainable living, health, and well-being. Some 100,000 visitors, with many garden designers, flower growers, landscapers, plantaholics, garden furniture makers, food fanatics, and others, came through the gates here on this June bank holiday weekend. Our Mooney Goes Wild team are with me to talk to some of the experts who have garden designs dotted around the area, some of the designers of gardens for children, which encourage play in the natural world, those using virtual reality headsets and outdoor space design, and a car company that has sponsored a garden here, Citron. We'll find out all about that a little bit later on. But first, let's talk to my colleague, Niall Hatch. Niall, from Birdwatch Ireland, you've got your Birdwatch Ireland hat on you today.
Literally.
So Birdwatch Ireland always has a presence at Bloom.
That's right. You mentioned 17 years of Bloom there, which actually, yeah, that comes as a bit of a shock. I've been here for every single one of those days of Bloom ever since the very start. So we were one of the first charities, one of the first NGOs to become involved here in Bloom. We're very grateful to the organisers for allowing us in to talk to members of the public, recruit members, and get donations and spread the word about birds. And it's a very effective place.
Does it work?
Oh, it really does. Bloom is so busy. You meet so many people, literally thousands every day. And we're finding over that 17 years, the interest in wildlife particularly, it's increasing all the time. Probably the question I'm asked most, even more so than like, is this the same robin in my garden for the last 20 years, is Derek with you? So today you
are. I am. I'm with you, so to speak, in mind, body and spirit. But it's extraordinary. I've never been here. I've never been at Bloom. Can you believe it?
It's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I think people who've never been here don't really understand the scale of it or couldn't appreciate it. It is absolutely enormous. The amount of effort that goes into this, it's incredible. And I have to say, it's one of the best organized shows that I've ever been at. The organizers of Bloom do a phenomenal job. It all runs like clockwork. And that's no mean feat when you're dealing with such a large space, so many exhibitors, so many members of the public, the vagaries of the weather, all of those things. And it really comes off really well every year.
Well, Niall, I suppose we better let you get back to your stand because you want to meet some more people. Niall, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Derek. Great to see you.
Now, as I mentioned, a lot of the Mooney Goes Wild team are here and they'll be exploring some of the gardens. Okay, let's get on with the show and meet some of the garden designers. Now, the first five Garden of Wonder and Discovery by Liat and Oliver Schurman is sponsored by the Department of Children. I'm not sure what stand number it is, but I know that Michael Sheridan is there with the garden designer himself, Michael.
Well, I've just sat down on a bench beside a man who has just been mobbed, not by adults, something far more harrowing, a massive bunch of wonderful kids who have been tugging at him, pulling at him, doing all sorts of things. Oliver Schumann, you have a fantastic garden here. You were showing it to the kids it was intended for. Tell me about your garden.
Well, we were sponsored by the Department of Children to design a garden to encourage parents to let their children play and children to play in the wild with natural materials, understanding nature and understanding the complexity, and at a very early stage of their lives, so from 0 to 5 year olds.
And the name of the garden is self-explanatory.
The name of the garden is self-explanatory. Well, I always have to look what the name of the garden is because it's such a long name.
The first five Garden of Wonder and Discovery. That's the journey we're taking kids on all the time.
Yes. So we designed this garden. My wife and I, we work as a team. My wife, Liat. I mean, especially Liat really embraced this whole idea. I mean, because we weren't really going to do a show garden. We came in late, but it was such a fascinating idea. And we have our own little grandson here, so we did it for him. And it was just fun finding things and understanding and kind of transferring yourself back into childhood, understanding what you love doing yourself in hedgerows, with streams, playing in the wild and making things out of sticks and stones.
But you see, that's the wonderful thing, that it actually involves making things, as opposed to, look, the default cheat setting now for any parent starting off is I'll get plastic grass. I'll get a few play school plastic molded playhouses. I'll get a horrible plastic slide. and I'll get stuff, oh, that'll be hard wearing and that'll stand the rain. I won't have to clean it. It'll be wiped down surfaces. And then I'll bung a trampoline in the corner. This requires an interaction. This is a stimulus activity for kids, isn't it?
It's absolutely important. I mean, children have to learn how to balance on sticks and stones and not in prefabricated materials. They have to feel that they're actually achieving it, making it themselves, instead of, as you said, buying a Wendy house and putting it in the corner of the garden, and the kids won't go near it. You would have been better off just going to the scrapyard and getting some pallets and hammer and nails and making it yourself. So kids have to be encouraged to be physical, to make things, to understand how to use a hammer, to feel the pain and not do it ever again.
Wonderful. So the activity is about stimulating young minds to actually use an imagination and not have everything done for them.
Yeah, and to build an imagination. I mean, children are not born with everything. They have to be inspired. And especially children, I mean, I know it from our grandson, because I didn't pay as much attention to my own children as it is. But with a grandson, it's different. You kind of see how much they actually learn, how much they soak in. Every little thing, every word you say, they pick it up, question it, and understand it.
So people will take inspiration who've been here to Bloom. What could people who maybe haven't had the chance to see your garden, what could they do to start being more thoughtful about how they prepare a garden for their young kids?
There's so many things, but the garden is really is for nature, is for wildlife, but at the same time for your children to actually, don't treat it as such a precious place. Let the kids cut something, let them put branches in, create paths which run in a circuit, create areas where the children can hide, where they can get away from you in sight. You know, it's the fact that we want to control everything. Every little thing our kids do is a huge mistake. Kids have their own mind. They have an instinct.
Wonderful. Well, it's a fantastic credit to both of you, to Liat and Oliver Schumann. A wonderful garden that challenges kids to be kids and enjoy their imaginations.
Yes, and to get dirty and forget about the fancy clothes and just rip them and use them.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you very much indeed, Michael Sheridan. Now, A Breathing Space for Fingal by Jane McCorkle is our next garden, and Niall Hatch is already there. Niall.
Derek, I'm in the wonderful show gardens here at Bloom, actually at garden number 21. Absolutely wonderful installation here called A Breathing Space for Fingal, sponsored by Fingal County Council. I'm here with garden designer Jane McCorkle. Jane, this really is remarkable. I've just stepped in off the main track and already I feel the tranquility of this. There's something really, really nice about this. It's very calming. The colours you've chosen, the plants, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you very much. It's meant to be a calm space, a space where people can step out of life and take a big deep breath and just reevaluate and get off the hamster wheel and enjoy nature.
I think there's more recognition now, isn't there, that we all need to do that in our lives. I think perhaps during the pandemic people had a reconnection with nature that they perhaps lost. How important do you think that is for people in everyday life, that they have access to a space like this, and how could they go about accessing such a thing?
That's where the whole idea of this came. Forest bathing and getting out into nature, it improves your health. So it improves your well-being, it reduces your blood pressure. And it's actually a prescribed medication in the likes of Japan, where you have to go out to nature and just take a deep breath and come outside and enjoy green. And it will help you with your mental health in every way.
There really is something about it. I'm just watching the plants here. There are bees buzzing around us. There are birds singing in the trees behind. There's just something honestly quite restorative about it. I find sometimes Bloom going around here, I'm working with the Bird of Ireland stand here, and it can be quite stressful setting that up. Actually coming here to recharge my batteries, I think I'm going to do this throughout the show. It really is quite remarkable, the effect.
Yeah, the point of this garden is that people will be able to come in, and this zone here would be like an urban zone, and then we go into what is a sanctuary. So people coming to visit Bloom won't see everything from out on the track. You have to actually come into the space to enjoy this garden in around with the hedges.
So Jane, I know this is supposed to be experienced as literally an experience. People go on a journey through. Could you please take me on that journey and describe to me what this garden's all about?
Okay, so you come into the space, and this is your small pocket park, urban space. You've got high walls around you, upcycled cartwheels to create a zone, if you like. And then we move from that zone through what the walls represent buildings, and we come into a space that is your breathing space. So you're surrounded by hedges and you're surrounded by plants for your overhead canopy. And then underneath we have all these beautiful perennial plants. Now, it's not a true forest as in brambles and ferns, because we wanted people to see what type of plants they can grow in shaded areas in their own gardens to create this sort of effect. We've positioned rocks in different spaces so that you can just sit down and relax, look up through the canopy, look around you and just take a big deep breath. And once you've transitioned, do you hear the birds? They're having a great time here. They've been flying in and out all the time. Little blue tits everywhere. And you walk the whole way through, and then at the end you come back into what would be, again, back into an urban space with buildings.
I really do feel that transition and that calm, actually. And it's nice that people aren't plunged into it immediately. You go through that transition zone, and then you're into sort of the, as you said, the equivalent of the forest bathing here. Yeah. It really does feel like two distinct zones. Now, of course, this is a show garden, and it's here for the purpose of showing people a bloom. How practical is this in an everyday setting? Is this something people can do at home? Is it something that local authorities should be rolling out across the country?
Oh, local authorities are trying to do it all the time. They're trying to get people out into their open spaces. I mean, Fingal has an abundance of open spaces. Ardgillan, Malahide, all these amazing places where you can go and go into a forest, go into to under the trees. But also they wanted people to enjoy the flowers. And people can enjoy flowers at home. They just need to experiment and not overweed. That's the biggest thing I think people need to learn to do. Stop weeding so much. Just enjoy what comes up in your garden. And you can do that.
I see the benefits immediately. Not alone are the blue tits all around us in the trees, there are hoverflies and bumblebees all around us too. There are butterflies. Yeah. It's really remarkable. Yeah. How long did it take to put this garden together in this location? How long have these flowers actually been growing in this place?
I started planting about a week earlier than I normally would, because I really wanted everything to settle down and actually grow. And you know, it's unreal. I think some of the stuff has actually grown by a foot. Some of the perennials.
The weather has been perfect. My own garden has gone mad.
It's just absolutely perfect. Everything has just. When I put the irises in, there wasn't one flower. They've just popped 2 days ago. You know, so it's brilliant. So I'm so glad we did the 2 weeks earlier to allow. And things are starting to grow in together as well, which is amazing.
Well, you know, they say the proof is in the pudding sort of thing, Niall. I mean, their blue tits are there, the bees are there. It sounds and feels and probably smells like a garden too.
It does. And actually, Derek, it looks like it's been here for years. It really looks like a space that has grown into itself, that the nature, it's in harmony with nature.
Gorgeous.
Everything beautiful, blooming. The foxgloves particularly look absolutely gorgeous. It's really, really nice to see it. But it's not all just about the plants, of course. You have lots of other man-made elements to this as well. You mentioned about those cartwheel rims that form the part of the roof of the initial structure in the transition zone, which I think look absolutely beautiful. I see down at the end here as well, you have this wonderful window effect with these recycled glass bottles. Where did all this material come from, and how important is it, do you think, to use or to reuse many of these waste materials in this kind of setting?
Well, I'm always very conscious, and I know Fingal are always very conscious of how much that we seem to materials that are used for the show. So we decided we were going to try and upcycle as much as we possibly could. So I spent a couple of days in one of the Fingal depots picking out bits and pieces, trying to decide how we were going to use them. Old curbs that were thrown away in a corner. Now, it's so tempting to just use the new because it would be easier. When you're using the old, there's a two process. We have to clean it to get it ready to then use. And then the cartwheels, they were just lying there, and I thought, oh my God, they're amazing. Why can't we use them? And so we spent a couple of days in a foundry putting them all together to make sure that they looked right. And then one of the ladies that works in my office with me, Sinead, we were trying to figure out what sculpture to use at the end of the garden to draw people down. And she said, why aren't we using recycled bottles? And I said, well, I don't want them stuck in a wall in some way. So she came up with that idea. And I think it works really well, because now we're able to borrow Oliver's garden and see into him.
So when bloom ends, Jane, will your garden be recycled?
Yes, absolutely. It's going to be rebuilt as a COVID memorial garden or commemoration garden in a Fingal park that they're developing at the moment.
To be decided or confirmed?
To be confirmed or revealed. They have a good idea as to where. They just want to make sure it's right.
Well, will you let us know? Because we'll be there with you when it's unveiled to the public in a public space outside of Bloom. So thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks, Niall. And we'll catch up with you again later on, okay?
Great, Eric. Thank you.
Now, Green Cities Europe Parklet by Davy MacDonald is sponsored by Bord Bia. And it's a very interesting concept to put little parklets in urban areas. Anyway,
Our broadcast coordinator, Daniel Keating, is the man for this job. It's his first ever report for the Mooney Goes Wild programme. Daniel, it's all yours.
Thanks, Derek. I'll give it a go anyway.
Yeah. Good man. Off you go.
So I'm here with Davy MacDonald. I'm at the Parklet. What is Parklet?
Well, it's a Green Cities garden, and it's sponsored by Green Cities Europe, which is a Europe-wide campaign to promote greening and innovative greening of buildings and urban developments. And so they have a Green Cities Award every year that, you know, people can enter their projects for. So basically what we started out is, you say, you take your typical street where you have your footpaths, your road carriageway. We're pretending the walled garden is a line of buildings in this case. And we say, well, if you take your typical street, you remove two or three parking spaces from a street, you know, you create room for a parklet, which is like a little micro park. In this instance then, what we've done is we've carpeted that parklet with an Irish wildflower meadow, which we laid as a turf, really, really good turf grown up in County Meath by Summerhill Lawns. And then to add another bit of interest, we've planted some ornamental perennials through that, but we've picked species that are either native, like the foxglove, or pollinator friendly.
It's not your usual type garden, is it? It's very urban.
It is, yeah. I suppose it's maybe a juxtaposition of sort of the harshness of a street with the kind of rural wildness of the wildflowers and the birch tree grove. So also with the tree planting, like a lot of street tree planting, you typically get one individual tree or a line of trees, yeah. Lollipop type trees.
And
you know?
It can be quite boring.
Yeah, yeah, but good, yeah, 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 exactly. No, it has its place as well, yeah. but here what we're trying to do something a bit different. Like this is a display garden and a garden festival, so just if you don't experiment a bit and try out new ideas, you're wasting your time. So here we've introduced a grove of native Irish birch trees, and I always feel that trees grow better in groups. They grow better in the wild in groups because as they grow, they're sheltering each other from the wind when it's coming from different directions. It's also more impactful. So a group of trees is more of a presence, okay? And also as they mature, there's more cover for birds to perch on and to roost in.
It's quite common across Europe, this type of gardening, isn't it, in terms of parklets and stuff. Yeah. Is that something you see in Ireland going to grow as the years go by?
Oh, I very much hope so. It's certainly something in practice I've been promoting, and Dublin City Council, who were one of the collaborators on this project, are really, I mean, they've been doing a lot of greening projects across the city, and have been, you know, but they're not sort of standing still. They're always looking to see how they can even bring more biodiversity, more nature-based solutions into the project.
I must hand it to Dublin City Council, because just outside Cineworld there at the end of Parnell Street where it meets Capel Street, they put a little parklet in, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
A guy used to sell secondhand bikes there, but now they've got this parklet and it's gorgeous.
I'm just watching here. You see bees and insects and things. It's really helping our wildlife, isn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's an amazing thing when you do projects like this, and like the bees appear the next
straight
day.
Straight away. Yeah.
Yeah, straight away. Yeah. And look, that's a huge part of it. And look, it's not just about how you design parklets, but also long term how we manage and maintain our environment. So a meadow as I suppose a landscape topology, the great thing about it, you know, it's not about fussy weeding, it's not about using knapsack sprayers, it's a very, very robust idea that you allow it to grow, you cut it back in the, you know, September ideally, you know, after some of the seeds have started to drop, and you take away the cuttings and let it go again. It's very, very simple.
I presume that this is going to be in loads of different surroundings across the country. Is it important that gardens reflect the surroundings they're in, so they're all going to look different?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where design comes in. So like in this case, you know, look, we had a bit of fun with old garden railings and we repurposed those as frames to train honeysuckles onto and gave them a different colour. That's what designers do, you know. Your materials tend to repeat themselves, but it's how you adapt it to different spaces you're working in, to microclimate, but also sometimes the heritage of the street you're working on as
art.
Well.
It's art.
Yeah, maybe. Somewhere between art and science, isn't
something
it?
Like that.
Yeah.
Lovely, that's brilliant. Thanks so much. Well, Derek, I gave it a good go, so let me know what you think.
You are excellent. Thank you very much indeed, Daniel. Now, the No Act Prevent Garden by Declan McKenna is sponsored by the National Poisons Information Centre and the Health and Safety Authority, and it aims to raise awareness on the best safety practices when using garden chemicals and the importance of reading labels and keeping children, very important, safe from substances that might be dangerous. It's designed to represent a typical family home with a kitchen, laundry, garden and shed storage. The designer is Declan McKenna. I met with Declan earlier, along with Dr. Edel Duggan from the National Poisons Information Centre in Beaumont Hospital.
I'm Dr. Edel Duggan from the National Poisons Information Centre in Beaumont Hospital.
And I'm Declan McKenna. I'm the garden designer for the garden.
Now, we'll talk to you, Edel, first of all. So tell me about the concept for the garden.
I suppose we get over 6,000 calls concerning children who have potentially poisoned themselves, and we wanted to increase awareness about the dangers of chemicals in the house and the home. So we came up with the concept of trying to have a safe home, safe garden. Mm-hmm. Declan has kindly transferred our concept into this garden.
Safe home, safe garden. How many people did you say each year?
We get over 10,000 calls.
That's shocking.
6,000, over 6,000 are in young children, predominantly those toddler age group 1 to 2, where they're exploring their environment. Okay. So we wanted a low toxicity garden, basically. So all these plants, Declan will be able to tell you more about the plants.
Yeah, I'll get to Declan in a second. But tell me about the issues that families, children are facing in the home.
Well, I suppose of the 6,000, 1 in 5 we have to refer into hospital, and the ones that we predominantly get called about are your liquid detergent capsules, paracetamol would be the other one, and then reed diffusers, which people aren't aware of, but the liquid in the reed diffusers can be quite toxic as well.
Yeah, I can imagine it is, yeah. What the kids are picking it
They're
up?
They just pick it up and take a drink,
it? And then when it comes into the garden, what's it got to do with the garden?
I suppose your garden shed, if you look in your garden shed, there's quite potentially very toxic stuff in your garden shed, your pesticides, your insecticides, stuff like that that are very toxic. And our key message, I suppose, would keep them out of sight, out of reach of children, stored away. If you have a product in one container, always leave it in its original container. Yeah. Don't transfer it into another bottle, like a drinks bottle. That has happened, where somebody has accidentally thinking it was a soft drink and took a drink out of it and has ended up in hospital. And then teach children to always ask if something is safe to eat or drink. So the plants in the garden, you know, I know my kids, they go around, if they see any kind of red berries, they'll want to eat them, or blackberries. But always teach them is it safe to eat? Ask an adult, is it safe
basic
to eat?
Basic sense that we were all told when we were kids, actually, to be honest with you. But it is very basic, probably not everybody does it. Thank you, Edel. Now, Declan, very nice to meet you. So will you describe the garden?
The garden reflects a typical family home. It's full of colour. It can be enjoyed by adults and children. It's very safe for children. You come from the kitchen area out into the garden, into the main terrace. Mm-hmm. Above the terrace you have a lovely contemporary pergola.
Yep.
And then that there is surrounded by luscious perennial plants with low toxicity. From the terrace you move on to a gravel path that leads you to a bench. The bench symbolises an area where you can actually sit and reflect on how you can make your own home safe and how we can actually go about that. The bench then looks onto the shed, where the chemicals in the shed are stored high and out of reach of children. So again, that's just getting that message across that's very important to do that. We have loads of nice specimen trees as well. So it's a really nice space for everybody to enjoy.
And did you find the brief you were given restricted you in any way? You can be honest.
It was definitely challenging because it was something that I'd never done before. But as a garden designer, you take those challenges on and you get into the brief and you really go through it and make sure that you're trying to nail the brief as best you possibly can. And hopefully we've actually done that here.
Well, it's a lovely garden. It's small, it's compact, but it's so pretty, and yet there's various different areas in it, and there's different cover in it, and there's different levels in it, which is what I really like about it. So when you chose all the plants that you were going to put in, did you then refer back to Edel and say, is this toxic? Is it not toxic? How did you get over that little hump?
Exactly. So there was a list of plants put together, and there was a number of revisions because, again, working with the National Poison Information Centre and Edel, we were able to get the actual plants there that were low toxicity and were fitting to the garden.
Okay, Edel, do you know what I'm thinking? You know when you go into a restaurant now, they have to tell you how many calories there are in this and that and the other. Are you going to take this further now to garden centres and say toxic, non-toxic?
Well, actually,
with the plants,
on,
or are you already doing that? Excuse my
well,
ignorance.
Well, no, but actually, that's probably a good idea. But on our website, poisons.ie, we're in a low toxicity and a high toxicity list of plants that they are that people.
But it would
can
be nice,
to.
You know, on the
it
label
would,
to
actually,
just state
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
I mean, it seems like it's no big deal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, highly toxic or not, it's a great idea.
Wouldn't it?
Great,
you know, for people who want to garden safe for the children.
Like you're on your chemicals, that, you know, a hazard sign or
something like that. Well, anyway, it's a lovely garden, so Adele, thank you.
Thank
and
you very much.
Thanks very much indeed as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Now, I mentioned Virtual Haven at the beginning of the programme by Dara Colopy. Niall Hatch is very interested in this. It's a space with a difference. It showcases the potential of virtual reality technology and garden design, and it offers visitors an opportunity to step into the virtual world using a headset to explore the initial design concept before enjoying the completed garden in real life. Well, Niall is in one of their completed gardens, and it's kind of an Asian fusion, Niall.
Derek, I've moved on to another garden here, garden number 6. Quite a remarkable space, I have to say here. I'm joined by the designer, Dara Colopy. Dara, could you describe the garden to me here? What's the story here?
Yeah, well, the theme for the garden is Irish cottage, but with Asian influence. So we've got a lot of Asian native planting. So we've got the cornucosa, the acer, the fatsia. And that's kind of from my time that I spent in Thailand for 5 years, where I met my beautiful wife. And her business is the sponsor, Kritya Yoga. So in the center of it all, there is a meditation area. So you're encapsulated by the nature surrounded by it is kind of the theme I was going for.
Oh, I see it now. Yes, so we have this circular area, the wooden area, the platform on the ground. That's the meditation area, and you're surrounded by the plants that are growing up around you. It's actually very effective.
Yeah, and we use the reclaimed oak boards there as well from a salvage yard down in Wexford, and then the edging is also reclaimed fence picket posts. And yeah, so kind of I do enjoy like reusing what we can and recycling where we can. Very important.
I particularly like the water features you have at the back here as well, these stones with the water coming and bubbling down them. There's actually something very calming about that, and actually I can see the Asian influence there in the design.
Yeah, and they're handpicked from Rosslare Strand Beach. So yeah, that was kind of to add with the zen and the meditation, to have that kind of relaxation while you're meditating surrounded by nature.
It's actually remarkable what you've done in what is actually a fairly small space here. What's the dimensions of this garden?
This is just a 5x5, so I think it's actually the smallest garden in bloom.
And yet it's really effective. I'm seeing the bees and the hoverflies around us here coming into the foxgloves. I'm just seeing that sense of calm, even though I'm literally 2 or 3 feet in from the main path, people going up back and forth, security guards, all the workers here. And yet when I'm standing in here, I feel like I'm in the countryside. It actually is quite remarkable.
You feel zen, do you not?
Zen, exactly. That's it, Derek, yes.
But you're supposed to.
Yeah, and visitors sadly won't be able to step into the garden, but next door in the marquee, I'll have the VR headset where they'll be able to actually step into the garden through the VR and kind of see what it's like at the initial design stage.
Well, that's the other really unique aspect about your garden, the virtual reality side of it. How does that work? Has this been done before at Bloom?
I don't think it's been done at Bloom before. I think this is a first, so it's very exciting to see how it goes. So yeah, I just started up the business in January. So it's garden design and with VR, so the clients can actually step into their garden before it's built, so they can actually feel how it's going to be before. You know,
that's
first
a lovely idea.
Garden.
Do they get a sense of how much it's going to cost as well?
Well, it all depends. There's lots of factors.
I could definitely see the scope there for you have the visuals, but then you have some of the scents in there, like subtle perfume, a little breeze. People could really feel like they're in nature, experiencing it for real.
Yeah, we have like the sounds of birds, the sounds of the water, so you'll actually get that sense of what it's like.
We've spoken a lot over the years on Mooney Goes Wild about a condition called nature deficit disorder, where people are divorced from wildlife, from open spaces. And we're hearing a lot now about the therapeutic, mental and physical health benefits of immersion in nature. Do you think that there's scope with this virtual reality technology for people for whom it's actually impossible to go to real gardens or real forests, maybe for mobility issues or people who live in the middle of dense cities with very little opportunity to get out and about? Do you think that actually that could help them?
I think that's a fantastic idea, because there are at the moment virtual reality like meditation apps and stuff like that already. So yeah, why not? If you can't have your own garden, just put on the headset and there you do.
Well, it really is very effective. I think that the whole idea with the virtual reality and this lovely Asian-Irish fusion here, it's absolutely beautiful. Very best of luck. I hope you do very well in the competition here.
Thank you so much.
And you've been to Asia many times now.
I have, and I'm getting some Thailand vibes here. It's not as hot as Thailand, even though it's a lovely day here at the moment. But it really does have that effect. I think actually, Derek, the blend of the Irish and the Thai here is actually quite effective, really remarkable. I really love it.
Well, we'll make sure we have a picture, and it'll be on the website so you can check out pictures and in some cases videos of the gardens that we're featuring in this particular episode of Mooney Goes Wild. And all you've got to do is go to our website, which is rte.ie/Mooney. Now, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Derek.
Sounds like a great idea. Virtual reality for people who might not be as mobile as others. Anyway, let's go back to Michael Sheridan. This next garden is Citron, the power of one. And it's all about recycling everything, including the family motor car. Michael.
Well, Derek, I hope you're enjoying the soothing sound of gentle trickling water. We're at the fantastic exhibit number 19, garden number 19, which is a very horrible way of saying this fantastic garden. Is called the Citron Power of One, and it's designed by Nicola Hines, and it is an absolutely stunning place to be. It's an oasis of calm, but it's a green garden. It's a very green garden. Nicola's beside me now. Nicola, you must be so proud of your creation. It's a wonderful, wonderful garden.
Yeah, thank you. I am. We're very proud of it. It's been a big team effort by the Citron team and also by the contractors as well, Silverstream. And it's been a long journey, but it's been worth it.
Tell me about the thinking behind it. You wanted to make an environmental garden that anybody could have, potentially.
Yeah, exactly. What we're trying to show is an alternative way that you might use a what's typically a very underutilized space, which is the front garden, and how you might use it to improve your community, but you might also use it to combat the effects of climate change and create a better environment for wildlife as well.
Now, looking at it, it's a lovely small little house. We're in the front garden. We've rain gutters, we've chains hanging from that. We've a lot of water. So tell me what the thinking is behind that.
Well, really, we were trying to demonstrate a very simple, a sustainable urban drainage system, which basically uses fallen rainwater from a roof, and it recycles it and uses it, I suppose. And we enjoy it on its journey down into a wildlife pond and then also into a rain garden as well.
Now, the rain garden is really interesting because in Ireland we tend to have feast or famine. We've had glorious weather in the lead up to bloom, and people here I've seen a lot of Irish tans, as we call them. There's a lot of redness around the place. People aren't using their sunblock. But what happens? We get deluges of rain. I mean, you'd wash away the plants. Well, I'd go and buy plants and they'd be washed away after a heavy shower. You've particularly planted a certain way that alleviates that problem.
Yes, there's a particular design that you would follow, and there's lots of information online about how to create a rain garden. But basically, the plant's choice that you would use, the plants have to be able to withstand waterlogging for periods of up to 48 hours. But you would also design it in a way that the soil wouldn't be eroded when it goes after a deluge as well. But there's an awful lot of information about rain gardens online and accessible to everybody as well.
Now, everybody in urban areas that particularly aware of pollution and particulates, particularly, and they're the nasty little things that we breathe, or when we smell pollution, we're breathing in particulates. You've planted in a very clever way to minimize the effect of particulates.
Yes, I've done a lot of research into air pollution and the ways that plants can mitigate or filter some of the airborne particulates that are everywhere in our urban cities.
Would you just give me an example of some of the type of plants we could look out for that are good at absorbing particulates?
Yeah, so basically you're looking for a range of different foliage sizes, but things, and sometimes evergreen as well, so things like the Pinus mugo. So Pinus is a obviously a big genus, and they get very large trees. But the Pinus mugo are the miniature ones, they don't get too big. There's things like Taxus, again, our native yew is particularly good. There's Alcamilla, Alcamilla mollis, which are very good. Euphorbias, there's Achilleas, again, our native Achillea. So there's a good range of plants. And Cotoneaster as well, there's a particular one, Cotoneaster francettii, which is particularly good, apparently, at absorbing particulates or filtering.
Now you've got a small area, but you've really planted it so lushly. It's really full, and you'd be in it and you'd think this garden has been here for years. There's lots of follies around the place as well. It's little bits which made me smile as a motoring journalist. I'm looking at the clever use of old disused car parts. Like, I see clutch plates into the patio here. I see bits of upturned green, bits of bottles of glass, even there's bits of crockery. And it's like a modern day folly. It's like it's raising a smile, and you're giving things of interest in what otherwise could have been just a bit of decking or a bit of a few slabs down. So that you're thinking behind the use and your seating. Of course, we have to talk about your seating. Tell me your thinking behind that.
Well, yeah, this was a real labour of love. I'm calling it a sort of embodied carbon carpet, really. I suppose we are wanting to find a reuse for hard materials that have been used and maybe disused or from building sites. So we collected things over a year, and those included bits of crockery that we find in building sites, but all predominantly things with a high embodied carbon, so things like glass, steel, concrete, brick. And we, rather than going to waste or going into a skip, we pulled them out of the skip and basically put them together in a like a sort of a scrapbook version of a patio, now, rather
while,
than using.
While some people, Nicola, might find themselves having to sit in horrendous plastic chairs.
Yeah.
You have something from your youth, but it's also very relevant to Citroen as the most comfortable chairs you will find in a garden. Tell me about them.
Yeah, these are chairs that we have very generously donated just for Bloom from the from a 2CV. And the 2CVs were actually made to have the chairs removable for picnics. So we wanted to show them in the garden. I mean, they're fantastic, really. They're a bit like camping chairs.
They're wonderful. Yeah, just to describe them, Derek, they're like a frame, a metal frame with multiple holes throughout it. And there's springs attached, but the springs only play a small part. You can actually, you know, thread the thing. You could nearly use wool and whatever you had around the house, even old jumpers, to make the seats if you wanted to. So it's the most basic form, which again is in keeping with André Citroën, who was a fantastic pioneer in the motoring world, in keeping with that. And it just shows an absolute regard for making the best of what's around and enjoying the oddities and finding and repurposing them. It really is. It's wonderful. So you must be so proud.
I am. I think that kind of quirkiness or that innovative sort of thinking, yeah, exactly. We were really inspired by that, and that's something that we really wanted to come through in the garden. So if it does, I'm really proud of that.
And we must mention your dad, who had an ingenious thing. I'm looking up here, and I love the engineering of it. We've a mister. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So my dad, apparently, when I was researching for ways to mitigate climate change and air pollution, apparently in China they have used, I have no idea how successful it is, but it's basically a very fine mist. It's not a fog, it's a very fine mist. And if you use the mains water, it has to be mains, unfortunately, but you use it just occasionally whenever you want to sit out, but the air pollution might be particularly bad. And the mist grabs hold of the larger particulates, airborne particulates, and they fall to the ground. It makes them heavier and they fall to the ground. So the idea is, in this garden, we were trying to collate a whole load of information that's already out there. We're not really, I suppose, inventing anything particularly new, but it's a way of bringing things together that mightn't have been pulled together.
Much
in
you
garden.
Don't have to invent something new, do you?
No.
But I saw your garden, Nicola, and it kind of strikes me as a back garden out the front, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I know, and that's a good point. And I suppose it's kind of prettier than I had envisaged. I thought maybe it would turn out tougher. I mean, I suppose we were trying to keep the boundaries lower, because I think if you invest in your front gardens from a community point of view, I think if you're in the garden, in the front garden, it sparks off a whole load more conversation with neighbours. And I suppose you reinvest in your community, and there's a lot more casual conversation that can take part.
Absolutely. It's a very generous thing to do.
Well, I would imagine they'd be mad jealous. Because, you know, to come across somebody's house and the first thing you notice is all this lovely planting of wildflowers, or particularly at this time of year, and then a pond, and then you see the water has been recycled, and then you see seating areas outside, and you think, am I in the back of the house or the front of the house? But it's fabulous.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah,
well, and I think we should give a word of caution to people with other cars. If they go and try and take out their rear seats, they might be invalidating their warranty.
Right, that's
stick
a
with
very
two CV seats.
Yeah.
Anyway, Michael, you're there to talk about cars,
yes,
as well. That's why we asked you to come along today, because you know about these things.
Wonderful. Well, again, look, with Citroën, I'm still smiling because I think of André Citroën, and now I'm even smiling more because as I come to join Trevor Hunt from Citroën Ireland, I'm approaching the Citroën AMI, which is a wonderful piece of engineering. It's essentially, if you wanted to design a toy car, it would be it. It's a two-seater car made with recyclable materials. It runs on electricity, has a tiny battery, is incredibly green, and is perfect for the urban environment. And it just blends so well into this garden because it's considered. It's an urban joy, Trevor. You must be very happy with it.
Absolutely delighted, Michael. It's an urban mobility solution. So Citroën has been a brand around since 1919. It's got a history of innovation throughout all those years, and really founded on accessibility for people, about well-being, which they were always very comfortable cars and still are, and then always about daring to do something different. So in this day and age, well-being is about well-being for people and planet. It's not just about comfort, it's about being comfortable in the choice that you make and how you get around. So we've tried to come up with a solution for an urban mobility solution to make it more accessible in city centres, that really, what do you need? Sometimes enough is just enough. And this car is just enough for city centres.
Just
for
enough of what,
around.
Trevor?
Well, just enough of joy. It really is a joyful machine.
It's funny, you step inside, Derek, there's two seats, the modular seats, both seats are identical. The doors on either side are identical. One opens backwards, one opens forwards. They're interchangeable. The front and the rear are exactly the same. They're made out of the same old plastic. The only difference is there's red lights on the back for your brake lights and headlights at the front. So it's such a clever use of resources as well. It has a tiny battery. It can do up to 75 kilometers. Its top speed, now this is the more worrying part for urban users who might feel it's not enough, is 45 kilometers. Now if you go into a headwind, that'll drop a little bit, but for urban use, it's quick enough. And the thinking behind it globally from Citroën, as I understand it from having chats with Trevor.
You're not on
others.
The payroll, Michael, are
no,
you?
No, but the thing is, this would be a sort of a solution to transport. So you'd get your bus into town and then you'd be able to just hop into one of these as a hire vehicle, like a hire scooter or a hire car. Mm. So it's still in a bit of limbo in Ireland, Trevor, though, isn't it? Because while I'd love to go in and buy this, and I believe it would be circa 10 grand thereabouts, if I could, we're in a bit of red tape here. The government and legislation in Ireland is a bit retarded in this sense, isn't it?
Yeah, well, at the moment it's classed as a quadricycle, so we're working through...
And actually, the lovely thing with quadricycle, why do you say it, is in France, Derek, you can drive this as a kid, as a teenager.
The age of 14.
And you can also buy it in a supermarket. You know, like a car, you can buy it in a supermarket. Yeah. Sorry, Trevor.
Yeah.
But Ireland, we're sticklers, and the red tape is actually sucking all the joy out of this car at the moment for me.
Well, we hope to get through that and work through that now, and we'd love to launch it in this country, you know, and it's a great solution. It gives people more options and what they actually need, you know, and we're thinking about the life cycle of a car, you know, not just beyond what happens to this car afterwards. So as you said, Michael, the way that we've designed the bumpers, the front and back are identical, that's everything that we're trying to do about looking. So what is the impact of a car? So it's small little changes, but as a manufacturer, we believe that we have to do that now. And, you know, the greatest threat to the planet is the belief that somebody else will save it. Motor industry is not perfect, but we all have to do what we can, and that's what we're trying to do.
It's funny, there are other motor manufacturers here. I see Toyota have their first electric car here as well. But in fairness, without a hint of bias, we have to give Citroën a lot of credit because they've always been innovators. André Citroën was an absolute genius. He gave us the front-wheel drive, mass production, synchromesh gearbox, lots of things. So it's at the core DNA of Citroën. So Trevor, your involvement with Nicola, she's a Citroënian. She has a kid. Spent many. That's the name. Citroënian.
Like, I've been brainwashed.
So she had a 2CV as a kid.
Yeah.
So how cool was that?
It's a perfect marriage, really, with this garden and what Nicola's trying to do about encouraging people to make, even if it's a small domestic front urban front garden, you can make a little difference, you know. And it's the same about just being a little bit more careful about how you choose to get around, what car you choose, and it's the same message. So it's been fabulous working with Nicola to produce.
And
this,
I think,
garden.
Derek, as well. Well, every car manufacturer is glad to queue up and take your money, and they're in business after all. I think in this garden, what it shows is that Citroën are doing it with a smile
I mean, you come away from this just going, you know, that's really good. And if that's where the industry is heading, that's brilliant for all of us, because it allows people options and to be as sustainable as possible. And the Emmy, you know, let's hope they get off their backside and sort the legislation out so we can see it in dealerships and people can buy it, because it's a lot of fun in an urban environment. It is just a very efficient use.
Well, you
of
said
the
it's
car.
All plastic. Pretty much, am I right?
Recycled.
Yeah. What does it sound like, Michael?
Oh, inside it's pretty loud, but look, let me just give it a tap here.
So that's what the body of the car sounds like.
Yeah. It sounds like a knock on a door from an RT sound effects library, doesn't it? So there's so many elements to it where you go, this is actually all I need. Like, if you need to go shopping, there's enough space in the footwell behind your own driver's seat to do it. There's plenty of seat inside, places inside and size inside for large people to sit in the two seats.
Two large people.
And they're sort of slightly staggered as well, so you've got plenty of shoulder room. It does buzz around town. 45 kilometres an hour is pretty nippy in something that's small, and it really is all you need. And it's reasonably tall.
But
so
you mentioned headwind.
Seen.
Is there any danger you'd be blown off the road? I'm not being funny now.
Absolutely not. You know, 75 kilometre range as well, and it'll charge within 3 hours. It'll charge
and
from...
It's weighty. It's an absolute feather. Weight in terms of
and
cars,
it has a sunroof, I believe.
Absolutely, glass roof there. So, and it's got the little windows that open as a nod to the old 2CV.
Flap open.
Yeah. So it's just about everything that you need. And
it's like air conditioning. You want air conditioning? Open the window.
Yeah.
You want a stereo? You have one on your phone. There's just a speaker in there, and you connect your phone to it.
The thing is basically the heavier you weigh, the more you'll consume and the less you'll go.
That's why it goes much less distance with me in it than Trevor. I get into it, the range reduces dramatically.
we'll test that.
It's the same physics. It's like everything with every single vehicle you have. You've got to shift, when you think about it, you've got to shift your weight or whatever you're carrying around the place. So it's all about right sizing, getting the right size vehicle that suits your needs. And this is perfect for the urban.
Well, again, we'll have pictures on the website so you can have a look at the car and more, particularly the garden and how they complement each other, let's say. Anyway, Trevor, thank you very much. And Michael and Nicola too.
Brilliant. Yep.
Embracing the Elements by Benny McGuinness, supported by the National Dairy Council, is where we're going next. Our reporter John Bell O'Reilly is there. John.
Thanks, Derek. And we now find ourselves at a large concept garden entitled Embracing the Elements. It reflects the role climate plays in our agricultural sector while recognising farmers' responsibility to protect our natural resources and combat climate change. It's sponsored by the National Dairy Council, and I'm here with designer Benny McGuinness. Beautiful space, Benny, and it replicates a field pasture, and it's modelled on something called a hare's corner. What's a hare's corner, and why are you trying to replicate that?
So a hare's corner would have been the area in a field that was being cut for silage. It was the corner of the field that a farmer couldn't get to with his mower. But in fact, the farmer probably didn't know that at the time, but they were creating a little biodiversity patch for hares, for bees, you know, because they weren't touching it.
It's kind of like the new idea of a no-mow lawn.
Exactly, yeah. So it's a multi-species sward is probably a more marketable name than a hare's corner. And they're trying to recreate that along the whole hedgerow rather than just the corner.
So what is a multi-species sward and why is that important?
A multi-species sward is encouraging farmers to naturally plant beside hedgerows and waterways, so you don't have fertilizers or slurry that is entering into the insects or the wildlife in the hedges, or as well as the fish near waterways. So you're protecting your natural resources and encouraging farmers to be more environmentally conscious.
Yeah, so there's less dangerous chemical runoff into the local environment, but it's also about reducing carbon emissions and in so doing helping to combat climate change. How is it reducing carbon emissions?
Red clover is an important element of this. It's a plant that the farming industries are trying to encourage. What it has, it's got a deeper root than ryegrass. The deeper root is doing, it's pulling up different nutrients and nitrogen to help the atmosphere and reducing the uses of fertilizer. So you're reducing carbon from transport costs and delivery costs.
And the future of farming, as you see it, Benny, is cloud-based. Now, what does that mean to the ordinary everyday farmer?
Well, our movement in dairy production, dairy farmers are already using data to analyse, much like Fitbits for people. So you see a person walking down the road, they're measuring their heart rate, they're counting how many steps they're taking, they're measuring how much they eat. This is all technology that farmers are now using for their cattle. And they're also using, you know, sat navigational processes to measure how much fertilizer they're sowing. And it's basically the future of farming is probably going to be in your pocket.
So talk us through the different colors here, Benny.
So what we have is a densely planted area of clover. We also have some yarrow, actually a great herb for livestock. It increases the blood flow and circulation in livestock. We have also some ryegrass. We have some wildflower also. We've got buttercups and ragged robin, which are brilliant for pollinators such as butterflies and bees. And chicory and birdsfoot are brilliant natural remedies for worms in cattle. Our hedgerow consists of, you would be seeing beautiful hawthorn flowered buds along the countryside there in the last month. Very underrated tree and a hedge is Acrotagus monogyna, hawthorn hedge. We also have some Unonymon europaeus, which is Gilda rose. We have also Viburnum opulus, and then we have some lovely straggly Betula pendula. They're birch trees. So I'm trying to just recreate a good old rugged countryside ditch.
A good old rugged countryside ditch, Derek. That's great, Benny. No better man. Thank you very much indeed.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, John and Benny. Before we go, let me just congratulate some of the gold medal winners who featured in today's programme. First, 5 Garden of Wonder and Discovery, designed by Oliver and Liat Sherman, sponsored by the Department of Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth. A Breathing Space for Fingal, designed by Jane McCorkle, sponsored by Fingal County Council. And Citron Power of One, designed by Nicola Haynes, sponsored by Citron Ireland. And a special mention to Marie Keating Foundation's Catching Cancer Early Garden, designed by Robert Moore, sponsored by AstraZeneca and MSD, Looms and Blooms, 300 Years of Avoca, designed by Kevin Dennis, sponsored by Avoca, Savills Sanctuary, designed by Alan Rudden, sponsored by Savills, and The Forest Balcony, designed by Catherine Feely and sponsored by Bord Bia. You can find some details of the gardens featured in today's programme on our website, rte.ie/Mooney.